Welcome to another episode of the Photo Facts Podcast. I'm Jim Felder.
I'm Robert Trawick.
This podcast is sponsored by Rode Microphones, the Australian pro audio powerhouse making incredible gear for podcasters, vloggers, filmmakers, musicians, and audio engineers.
Hey, what is happening, everybody? Woo. Yeah. Hey, it's Monday? Monday night at the Trawick's house.
And Monday night at the podcast Trawick Casa.
Yeah.
You know, we played our little road bumper that we got from Ryan White.
Right.
Dear friend of the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I really think we need to reach out to the folks at Castle Spirits in Oklahoma City.
Yes, we could have them as a sponsor.
Yeah, so we actually
we get
met
a bottle
them
a month. a bottle every 2 months.
No, I think a bottle a month wasn't enough.
Oh no,
dude, we just cracked this thing open 2 episodes ago.
Really?
And unless Terry's been getting into it, it's just been me and you.
No, you've been. Okay.
Oh, no. I know who
it
was.
Oh, yes. It was Roxy. We had with dinner night or whatever.
Yeah, that's what it was. Okay, so yes, yeah, like one bottle a month.
Anyway, yeah, Castle Spirits. It's honey brew.
Huh? Yeah, we're not alcoholics or anything.
No.
We just enjoy it. Is it technically considered a whiskey?
I think so. I don't know. I'm not a whiskey guy.
Anyway, so this is actually done in Oklahoma in the back of a plumber's.
Plumber's shop, yeah.
Plumber shop. So there's only a couple places you can get it.
There's several places. There's probably like 6 or 8 places.
You know, I was surprised they didn't have it at Byron's Liquor.
Oh, wow.
It's not listed, which I was kind of surprised on that. So it's castlespiritsokc.com, I think, is the website.
Yeah, I think so.
I thought they would put it on the bottle. Why wouldn't they put it on the bottle?
The URL? Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so welcome back to the podcast. We're happy you're listening right now.
We are.
And, hey, you know what? I'm just going to throw it out there.
What are you going to throw out there?
Wherever you're listening, go give us a review. Give us a 5-star and write something, you know? Write something that said these guys suck or these guys are funny or these guys are
If we're horrible, fun. They're not going to give us a 5-star.
That's true, but
do you hear my dog whining?
I do hear that, yeah. I think somebody's home.
No, I'm going to go check.
Okay.
You keep talking.
Okay, so I was going to go. I was going to go somewhere, but Robert needs to be here.
Oh,
so I'll just get Jason on. We've got a guest. Tonight's guest is Jason Pierce. He's going to do a class at PhotoCon this year, and I actually know him from a little ways back at Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, the first time I met you, you actually were shadowing me on a photo shoot, on a real estate shoot, and I had to use your Canon. I'll never forget.
I thought that was about the best thing ever.
Yeah, I forgot all about that. Yeah, you were like, yeah, he's an icon. He's going to use my camera. Yeah, I think that was
so
the D750 that had the shutter problem, and I had to send it in like I think 2 or 3 times with the shutter.
Didn't you mention that was the sharpest real estate photos you've ever taken?
No, I did not mention that.
Man, the color on those was incredible.
Yeah, the color was amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, so
that was a really cool. That was a real cool way to meet you, though, Jim, for sure.
Yeah. I bet. So I didn't even think about how that would make you feel. I was just thinking, I was just stressing about, oh my God, I got to use this guy's camera, and I feel like God, I'm such a failure. But anyway, so where I was gonna go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, actually, the way it made me feel was kind of vindicated, because you know, as a Canon shooter, especially, I mean, Jim, that was 7-8 years ago. You know, as a Canon shooter, Nikon people, you know, have a lot of fun picking at you, and to have a Nikon shooter have to use my camera on a night photo shoot, I just thought was about the greatest thing ever.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, we didn't even know. All the Canon guys know Jim just from that story.
Yeah, that's funny. Okay, so I'm glad Jason's on here, because he can snicker and laugh and join in at some point, but So Robert, you remember, I forget where we went. Where did we go recently on a trip together? Just very recent.
Very recent? We went to McAllister.
McAllister, yes, to go shoot an old government building.
Yes. I did the drone. You did the
Matterport. 3D.
The Matterport, the 3D.
So was it on the way? It was on the way back, wasn't it?
Are you talking?
Okay, remember? Okay. So
are you talking about when we missed our exit?
No, because
we were
no.
holding hands
oh, no.
in the car.
Oh no! No, we don't do that. No. Remember? Okay, you remember? You mentioned you probably love having that push button starter or something like that on the car. Right?
On the car. Oh my God! I forgot about
don't
that.
Don't say nothing. Don't say it.
Oh my
so
God!
So we're driving down the street, and I said. I said, I wonder if it'll still run if you push the button.
Well, so he's got the push button start, and I've never had one until recently, and there's so many questions that come to mind. So, like, you know, the fob has got to be close to the car, mm-hmm. right? So if you park in the garage and your key fob is, like, hanging near the garage, technically you should be able to go in the car and start it, but then I feel that as you drive away, it would stop if you got too far, right? Yes. And then Jim's driving, and I said, Jim.
It's my Acura MDX.
I bet you this thing is so smart, it knows you're in drive, you're driving on the road at 60 miles an hour. If you push the button to stop it, I bet you it won't start.
And No, it won't stop.
It won't stop.
We
won't
thought
stop.
It would keep running. Yeah.
It would just keep running.
So guess what happens? It dies. It didn't die. It just went off.
Oh, my God.
So I'm like, I have, you know how it is when your car's dead? You have no steering, no brakes.
No brakes.
And I'm coming to a red light, and there's cars sitting there, and I'm panicking. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm pushing the brake going, oh, shit.
And we can't start it because we're in drive.
Yeah, we can't start
we're
the car.
We're just coasting. We can't put it in park. We'll rip the transmission up.
So,
oh, God, that was
funny. So I'm like, I tried to start it. Put it in neutral, tried to start it. I had to actually stop to get into park.
Yes,
oh,
yeah, we
actually,
did put
no,
it in
wait,
neutral.
Wait. No, the light, didn't the light turn green and we coasted in or something?
Yeah, we coasted into the gas station.
Yes. Yeah, we had to find a place to stop.
And then remember, it wouldn't start the first time?
Yes, it wouldn't start. And I thought, oh, my God.
Well, he's like, you ruined my computer.
Yeah, I thought, and what else? It wouldn't start, but there was something else.
Something happened after you started. It wasn't running right.
Oh, it stayed in one gear. It wouldn't change gears.
It was locked in. Yeah, it was crazy.
It was like,
I completely forgot about that until you
I was cracking up on the way here thinking about it.
Well, he's mentioned that because we were getting ready to do a podcast on the road.
Yes.
And that happened, and we were just so tickled for the rest of the trip that...
Yeah, we were like, we've got to share this on the podcast.
We do.
It's a story.
Okay, so let's talk about Jason.
Okay, sorry, Jason.
Speaking at PhotoCon.
I wanted to include you in that fun story. How about that? Does that help?
That's an amazing story.
He probably doesn't have a start. He probably actually has a key he has to put in. He's like old school.
Oh.
Yeah.
Speaking of,
I still have a key, I think, but my car is getting a bit old. It's got about 170,000 on it now, and I'm starting to notice.
Hey.
I need to upgrade.
Well, this car's even got almost that. It's got a ways to go, but it's like 120.
Well, you know that, and that's something. Okay, you know, I'm glad you touched on that because I'm going to do us a little rabbit trail since both you guys are real estate photographers. Okay, so I'm curious because this question actually came up between Jim and I a few months ago. So gas, okay? So now Jim is an LLC, all right? So as an owner, he takes a distribution from the profits of the company. But he pays for his gas in his car with his personal money. I feel he should pay for it with his, he's traveling, it's a business expense. I think he needs to pay for it with his business credit card or debit card. How do you deal with the gas that comes out of your car? Do you fill it with personal or do you fill it with business?
Honestly, the gas never comes out of the car. It stays in there and burns out, you know.
It just disappears.
Well, I guess technically it does comes out the exhaust, but it just fumes.
Yes, it gets transformed.
Yeah, sorry.
So it's actually, I'm going to think about that question when I go to bed at night, because I do it the exact same way that Jim does it. I've been an independent contractor for 20 years. And so before I had an LLC, and I have a couple of LLCs, but before I had the companies and was working for as a sales rep for another company, I was a 1099 contractor for them. So I just do it, the way I file my taxes. I mean, I'm just, everything just is an expense as kind of Jason Pierce. And then I just have kept doing that with photography. But somebody approached me recently and said that I need to kind of at this point, and Jim, this may be a rabbit hole for you, that I need to really consider an S corp, and make myself an employee of the company and then expense everything against the company and then just take a paycheck. So I'm doing it the way Jim's doing it, but I'm starting to kind of evaluate and go, I might be able to.
Okay. So since you're doing it the same way, so let me, this is what I thought about after Jim had the I don't know how we came with the conversation, but we came with the conversation that way.
Cause I was getting gas with my personal debit card.
That's what it was. Okay. Mm-hmm. So here's my dilemma when I look at it from the outside. Okay. A real estate client calls you and says, I need you to go do a shoot in McAllister. And you're like, hey, no problem. The shoot is, let's just say it's $300 just for ease of money.
Right.
So you're going to charge $300 plus mileage. That's being deposited into your business account. Then you're going to pay for the gas to make that trip out of your personal account. Are you sending an extra expense to the business, which would not show up on your profit line because it's an expense, it's a reimbursement you're getting from the company, because now the company shows that, let's say you're getting $450 and now you're having to pay income tax based on $450 and not the $300 when you use gas from your personal. So that's how I was looking at that. Like your taxation is wrong higher because all that extra income is sitting in your business, even though you use personal to pay to get there.
Well, I don't look at mileage as related to gasoline, you know?
Because you have an electric car.
Yes. No. No, because it's, I think of the mileage charge is, you know, thinking of it as it's paying for my time away from my job. I'm driving. If I'm driving 2 or 3 hours, I'm that's time that I can't do anything, you know.
Well, it's
drive.
Paying for your gas, wear and tear on the car, and your what I call idle time.
Yeah, gas, but not just gas. You
right,
know?
It pays for everything.
But anyway, we got way off topic.
No. But he's a real estate photographer. You guys met together. You shot his Canon. You guys are connected. You guys are connected by the lug strap.
Okay. Alrighty.
Awesome. So let's talk about your class at PhotoCon coming up. I understand you had a title change.
I did. So originally, I called the class a craft, and you know, one thing I don't ever talk about is editing, and I really thought about. In that concept was just, you know, instead of just thinking about photography, especially because there's so many young and newer photographers that show up to PhotoCon, instead of thinking about photography as I'm going to shoot it and put a filter on it and post it and see what everybody reacts to it, I really wanted to talk about, you know, kind of the you know, a lot of photographers, especially the ones that have been doing it for a long time, there's a process, right? It's not just you shoot it and post it, you know, there's your setup and your framing and your shooting and then you're developing. And one thing people have asked me about before, especially because I do a ton of color landscape and then infrared photography, is that I get a lot of questions about how I edit them. Do I shoot HDR, which fun fact, I don't. How I get my images to look the way they look. And I thought, well, I would do a class that just kind of walks people through kind of my methodology of it. But COVID happened and PhotoCon got not really canceled, but moved and moved and moved. And the further I got away from that idea, I realized I just wasn't really in love with that idea. Mm-hmm. So I changed it to, the class is now going to be called Edge of Light. And, you know, really the whole concept on that class is to talk about kind of those moments when you're chasing light. And when you find good light, you know, first of all, what defines good light, right? You know, so, you know, just because it's a beautiful sunny day doesn't mean it's a good time to take pictures. And just because it's a sunset doesn't mean it's a good moment to take a sunset photo. That, you know, what are the things that, you know, I personally look for that I would judge to be, oh my gosh, this light's incredible right now and I need to photograph it. And then, and I had shared this with y'all before the show, but, you know, a friend of mine one time had commented that she really felt like in my work, you know, I photograph, my subject is the light. Mm-hmm. And as I think about that, that is the thing I'm the most excited about. And so with Edge of Light, the idea is when you find that light, how to know to, you know, how to determine that moment, that razor thin moment when the light is at its absolute purest and its most beautiful. And then once you see that, how do you frame it? Because composition is the one thing that I think a lot of younger photographers are lacking, because it's not like the old school. You know, I was taught in a journalism room, but a lot of these people just see photography on Instagram or, you know, get really excited about photography and don't ever start, you know, from the starting point of composition.
Right.
And to really talk about how important that is, that once you see the shot, because there's so many moments when you see something that's absolutely beautiful, but you just can't frame it. There's just nothing that really frames it and helps kind of amplify what you're looking at. So, you know, Edge of Light's, that's really the idea, is that to talk about, you know, how to see it, what are really good qualities of lighting in a scene. And then once you find it, how do you frame it? And so that's my class. And I'm excited about it because this really is the thing I'm the most passionate about in photography is composition and light. I mean, those two things, I mean, I can go days on. Because I think it's incredible to explore that, you know, just to chase light down and see what you get out of it. And I've got tons of stories of literally speeding, trying to find a location to catch a sunset, you know, or being stuck in a rainstorm and the thunder and lightning and trying to get to the edge of it to where you're not getting pounded with rain to shoot back at it, you know.
My God, yes.
You know what that makes me think of when you say that is you know, finding a specific subject and chasing that, you know, like I want to only shoot yellow buses or yellow, well, all buses.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know,
not
you
all
know,
buses yellow are yellow.
Yellow.
Some
right,
are red.
Yellow cars or yellow objects or, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of, you've specified a certain thing. It's not necessarily a subject, but, you know, the light and the composition. You're focused on that, you know, you're, I don't know, just made me think of that.
No, I think it's great that, you know, commenting on that, I feel that a lot of young photographers see light, but they don't examine it and understand it. So when they go out, they can be in awe of the light, but they don't know if that light's going to be better later or not. They just shoot it and move on. And they don't know if it was better because they didn't hang around and wait for it.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, something that just stuck, just remembered too, is Dwayne on Voxer. Dwayne, our friend Dwayne Lycan, that's been on the podcast. He talked about the way this girl he was shooting had some sunflowers in her hand, and there was a light coming through behind her, and the light was bouncing off of the sunflowers and bouncing or reflecting onto her face. And he said it was very, what did he say?
He actually said magical.
Magical, yes. It was very magical how that light, and I can totally see that. I can totally see how that can happen.
Well, the one thing I do like about where Jason's taking this with is composition. Mm-hmm. I think that everyone has an idea of composition. It's a word that we used for something that we look at an image that's pleasing. And I have to say that I'm extremely guilty of using the rule of thirds and leading lines. That's pretty much it. That's all for me. Like I look at rule of thirds. If you look at my images, like rule of thirds all day long, occasionally I'll throw in a leading line, but never have I ever used a golden rule or anything like that. So I think breaking down some of that stuff to the, you know, to the listeners, I think there's, how many are there? Like six different composition.
Oh gosh, elements. Let's get back to photo 101.
Yeah,
framing. Oh gosh,
framing, yeah. Leading lines, rule of thirds, golden rule, repeating pattern. And the repeating patterns is one, or is it
repetitive? Yep,
repetitive absolutely. Is one.
Yep.
So I think there's, we can probably safely say there's seven or eight that you look for. And I think you're right. There's a lot of times when I go out shooting on my own personal photo walks that I'll see a moment that the light is dancing with the shadow and I'm extremely intrigued. And then I shoot it. I get home to edit it. I'm kind of excited. And I pull up on the computer and it's extremely lackluster.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just like, okay, it doesn't have any frame in. What I thought were some good leading lines just are not strong enough. And I've gone as far as like rotating the crop to see if I could like force the leading line. And it's just like, this is just too much trouble. So how do you have experiences like that?
Oh, absolutely. Oh my gosh. I mean, countless times where I spend more time trying to, you know, find, you know, or well, I would say this in the beginning, before I kind of went down this path of, you know, just kind of being a light junkie, right, with sunsets and sunrises, tons of times when exactly what you just said would happen, you know, oh my gosh, this sunrise was amazing, or the way this light was, you know, bouncing off the concrete and hitting this wall or something, and you get home and look at it and like, man, it just wasn't what I thought it was going to be. You know, I just, and kind of my approach now is I don't really think about the rules of composition necessarily when I'm shooting a photo. You know, rule of thirds is a really easy one, but mm-hmm. I mean, I like to do a lot of dead center work and have lines that run you into it. You know, I did something on the Skydance Bridge a few weeks ago that the lines on the bridge really went in there. And I guess there was one rule, you know, we talk about texture.
Right.
There was a lot of texture in the photo that really kind of brought you in. And I was so excited because my aunt from Alabama actually commented, oh my gosh, there's so much texture in this picture. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. Like it was this great moment when somebody that is not a photographer, like commented on the exact thing that
you're trying to communicate. Communication occurred.
It's like a magic trick, right? You know what you're trying to, you know what tool you're using to amplify the image, but I think it's rare that somebody like picks up on what you did, right? That they pick up on, oh my gosh, you know, you chased, I mean, there's something I shot out in Black Mesa that's this bush against a rainstorm, and the bush is the anchor for the photo. The bush is not the photo. The rainstorm and the sunset in the background that looked like a scene from Gone with the Wind. I mean, it was just crazy, but the bush was what anchored it. And, you know, nobody would think about, you know, how I was using that because I was using a subject, just something in the foreground to draw some interest into the photo.
Right,
because
right.
Directly behind it was the storm. All they saw was the storm. So the photo was successful in that sense, but nobody had any clue that, you know, and they don't see a photo of a bush, right? They see a photo of a sunset. But I was using that bush to draw them into that sunset. And I still, to this day, can't believe we got that shot because my dad was with me out in the panhandle. And, you know, we'll go out to Black Mesa and chase these, you know, chase light. And it's actually a lot of fun and a little bit dangerous because at sunset in Black Mesa, there are tons of animals that come out. And one of them actually ran into us one time while we were driving.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's dangerous. Oh, my gosh. Black Mesa, you go 10 miles west into New Mexico, right?
Uh-huh.
And you end up driving on this highway called the Dry Cimarron Highway that ends at a gravel road. And you'll drive 10 miles down it, and at sunset, it looks like a scene out of Lion King. And you swear Simba's just been born. I mean, there are hundreds. I mean, it is insane. And of course, we didn't know that. So the sun setting, a storm hits, there's rain everywhere. And I mean, hundreds of deer, and we saw like antelope, and I mean, it's crazy. And we had a deer run right into my car. We were going 45 miles an hour. We had to slow down because there were so many animals, and we just got hit. it ran right into the side of my car.
Oh, God.
Well, I have not been to Black Mesa yet, and I want to go. And I'm not from Oklahoma, okay? I just want to go to see it. And everybody says, why do you want to go to Black Mesa? I said, because it's like a mesa in the middle of freaking nowhere. They're like, there's nothing there. And I'm like, I know, I want to go.
It is one of those things that I had always wanted to go. And I got out there, and you will be, I think the first time we went, we were out there for 24 hours and saw two people in 24 hours.
I like
that. And
it
was amazing.
I like that.
And it is dangerous. I mean, it's dangerous in the sense that, I mean, you will be you know, once you get on the dry Cimarron Highway, once you go into New Mexico, there's no cell signal. I mean, it is dangerous. And the most beautiful thing, and the Black Mesa is this big, big mesa, but it actually is a part of a chain of mesas that uh-huh. actually go into New Mexico. And so, I mean, I am so shocked that it's not a national park. It's that pretty out there. And people that have gone out there and have driven past Canton, where Black Mesa is, and driving to New Mexico will tell you it is one of the most gorgeous places they've ever seen. But if you drive through it at sunset, you're in trouble. It is there's so many animals. I mean, just so many. So, yeah. Anyways, I didn't mean to go down that, but it's totally okay. Worth the trip, Robert. You should do it.
Oh, I'm going to do it.
Well, Google Maps, I looked it up, and it says Black Mesa Preserve. It's like a green little thing on the map. You know, it's like it's a preserve, not a park, but
it's a preserve.
Well, do you,
apricot.
So you're looking at that, Jim? Are you looking at that map right now?
Uh huh. Yes.
Can you flip it to satellite view?
Yes. Okay.
So if you flip it to satellite view and you'd go west along the Colorado, Oklahoma, New Mexico borders, you'll see those mesas I'm talking about.
He is doing his magic. I want to go because it's the highest point in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And truth be told, I've never hiked to the top of it. We've always been at the bottom of it.
Well, because I was going to ask like that next. I want to go to the top and camp out overnight at the top. And someone told me you couldn't totally do that. But I figured if I go up there and there's nobody around, who's going to stop me?
So there's a Branson, New Mexico. And there's a Folsom. Is that the Folsom, like Folsom Prison Blues?
No, that's in Alabama, I think.
Oh, okay.
Folsom City Blues. Johnny Cash is there. Let's pack up and go.
Now, wait a second. Is that? Oh, that's Colorado Springs. Okay, never mind. All right.
You're way off.
Yeah, wait. So if you go, so just north of Folsom is where you would look. Just north of Folsom, you go up and you'll hit this little bitty road. It's like, I don't even know if it's a U.S. highway. I think it's just a state road. You'll see this road just north of Folsom that will run right into Canton, Oklahoma. And it's that, and you'll see it right there. That road runs between all these mesas. And they have names for them up there on like hand-drawn maps. It's crazy. They have like Wedding Cake, Battleship. I mean,
wow.
All the locals will tell you a story. It is a totally another world, but it'll take you, you know, six and a half hours to get up there. And then once you're up there, I mean, you have to go to New Mexico to find a store.
Wow. There's
nothing up there.
Red Mountain.
So,
Dale
and there
Mountain.
Are people that'll do like, they'll do stargazing up there. You can see the Milky Way up there. There's very little light pollution up there. I mean, you can see the Milky Way clear as day at night. It is a wonderful place to go.
Yeah, it's like 6 hours away.
You know, Jason, we were sitting here talking before the show if you had any workshops or anything. I think this is your workshop.
Take everybody up to Black Mesa?
I do. I think you get 10 photographers. They follow in their cars. You take them up there. You do the edge of light in person. You do some shots. You go to a couple of mesas. Charge them $1,000 a head.
I was going to say
$300. Oh.
I think Robert's thinking on that.
Yeah. I think he's kind of liking that little right. extra. That sounds like a Bedford-sponsored workshop to me.
Through Bedford's under the bus.
I'm down for that.
Yeah.
I like that. I think we need to pitch that. So you need to go ahead and bring that up. We're bringing it up now on the podcast. And then, like, in your photocom thing, you just kind of wrap it up. And like, if you're interested in learning more about Black Mesa and my Edge of Light series, please go over to talk to Eric Williams about our upcoming sponsored workshop.
You should get your dad on it, too.
Oh, yeah. Dad loves it. I mean, it's been kind of... it's been a real fun thing that he and I do.
Yeah, that's cool.
And just the two of us, we'll hop in the car and take off for 3 days.
That's awesome.
Now, are you camping out there, or is there a hotel in the middle of this mesa?
So there's a bed and breakfast that we'll stay at. And I wish I could remember the name of it, but if you Google, you know, Black Mesa Bed and Breakfast, it may be called Black Mesa Bed and Breakfast. And it's this couple that runs it, and in the mornings, and I'm so, of course, she probably won't ever hear this, but I'm embarrassed. I can't remember her name. But this lady and this husband run it. And in the morning, she'll come out and she'll ring like a, you know, she'll hit like a triangle, right? And breakfast, you know, it's breakfast time. And the first time we were there, I walked in and, you know, I'm originally from the South, and I know never to sit at the table with your hat on, right? but she took it a step further that I tried to walk in the back door to the kitchen
with your hat on.
She said, "Son, you need to take your hat off before you walk in here." And it was the funniest. Oh, it was so funny. And I just love it. And she is an absolute hoot. But yeah, they've got one really nice cabin that they've built that's real good for like couples. And then they've got like a bunkhouse. And there's one that my dad and I have stayed in where it's two rooms that both have doors going outside.
Uh-huh.
And they're just these old. I mean, it was probably built in maybe the 70s. I mean, they're pretty old. And yeah, it's just this little place you go. But there's no stores. I mean, you better show up with food. I mean, because there's nothing out there. But we'll go stay there, and she'll feed us breakfast in the morning, and then Dad and I will go run around exploring. And one time we took a friend with us, and because we thought he would think it was cool, and he didn't want to get up with us in the morning because you travel hard, right? I mean, you travel hard. I mean, you're up for the sunrise, you're up for the sunset, you know, then you're out at, you know, 10 o'clock at night trying to see the Milky Way. And I mean, these are long days. And my buddy wanted to sleep in, so I texted him and said, "Hey, we're going to breakfast." And he said, "Hey, I'm just going to sleep in. You and your dad go explore and just come back and get me." Well, one thing we didn't think about that I knew, but I just didn't think about in the scenario, was there's no cell signal once you leave Oklahoma and go into New Mexico, which is where we were driving. And so we went out there for about 3 hours. And we drive back into Oklahoma, and I've got this voicemail from him. It's like, "Hey, buddy, I'm just sitting here watching Price is Right with this couple. They're going to come get me." So he had to sit there and check out of his room and just sit there and watch game shows with him. And it was the funniest. Oh, it was so funny.
Oh, my God. You had to check out of the room, too?
Oh, yeah. Check out. It's time to check out. I mean, because we left at like 8 o'clock, and checkout was like, I don't know, 10, or, you know, they're pretty, I mean, and I don't think they really were kicking him out, but it, you know, he knew that checkout was like at 10 or 11, and it was like 11:30, and he's like, "I'm just sitting in their living room."
But oh my God. Me. Please come back and get me before this couple adopts me.
Oh man. We laughed so hard, not with him in the car because he was a little mad about it, but my dad and I laughed so hard the whole way back at this thought. And we're just out, you know, he's not a photographer, right?
Also, he's just going for the trip. Nerds,
and yeah, and he was like, "I just want to get out of town and see what you guys are up to." And we went, "Okay, tag along." And he just didn't realize how hard we, you know, you guys are photographers, you know. I mean, oh, you want to get the good light, and you got to explore in the middle of the day, right? You got to find those spots, and then you're up late and you're up early, and I mean, it's pretty dedicated. And, you know, he was thinking this is going to be just a couple, like a guy trip.
Yeah. We're going to sit around and drink and not do anything. And yeah. People have a hard time with that, I think.
Yeah. Well, and the first night we were out there, we went out on the other side of the Dry Cimarron Highway and wanted to come back, and we did not time this properly. We were trying to get back to Canton before sunset. And once again, we found ourselves driving in it in sunset. So all three of us were on lookout for deer. and it was so, at one point we're going 25 miles an hour. I'm telling hundreds of deer. I mean, it is unlike anything you've ever seen. Wow. Hundreds of deer. And we are, you know, they're running in front of us. they're on the highway.
Oh, I mean, gosh.
It's crazy. But I'll never forget all three of us. Deer, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock.
Do you have any video footage? Do you have any video footage of that? Or were you guys in awe?
I honestly would have wanted to video it, but it was like a battle.
Yeah.
to get through it. Like, I mean, I'm looking out. I was in the back seat looking out both windows. My dad was looking to the left. Brian was looking to the right. All three of us would try to look at the front. Oh, it was crazy. Oh. And so that was his first night there. And then, of course, we kept him up till 11 o'clock photographing the Milky Way, at which point he was like, "I am not getting up tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
Oh, my God. You know, with all those deers, this is what makes me want to do.
Deers? Did you just say deers?
Deers.
Deer.
Deer?
Yeah.
Is that the plural?
That's, yeah.
There's Isn't not, it? It's not deers?
It's just deer.
I don't know.
Okay, I'm. It's okay. I'm not perfect either. I mean, I say a lot.
Jim rags me because English is my second language. Yeah. So
I don't say things often. I don't say things correctly. With all those often. Extra deer. See, I just did
I think
it.
It's deer. I think you're right. Deer. So it doesn't have an S on it. So it's right, deer, correct. Singular, plural. Okay, yeah. So sorry. I want to get those deer whistles you mount on the front of the car.
Oh yeah.
And drive it like 60 miles an hour if you hit any. Yeah. And then call the company
hit,
and say,
"Oh, you'll hit them." Yeah. Oh, you'll.
Call the company and say, "Hey, these whistles don't work."
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I told you the first time we were up there, they hit us. This guy, we were driving down the road, and I looked over and saw it, and it ran right into the side of my car. And we drove, you know, about 50 feet away, pulled over, and got out and thought, well,
yeah,
this is going to be a pretty sad moment for this guy, you know. And I will never forget, he is laying on the side of the road. And he sit and his head pops up and he looks at us and he stands up and then he runs and he jumps over the fence and leaves. So he survived it.
So the car had dents, right?
Wait, say again.
The car had dents in it, right?
Oh yeah, no, oh. Oh, it was a $750.
Oh god,
it was an expensive trip.
You guys,
let's just say that it was a very expensive trip.
You guys lucked out because a lot of times you get the airbags and everything, you know.
Oh, if you get hit hard enough, it'll pop your airbags.
And
yeah, no, we pulled away. We saw him and pulled away from him. And then he ended up running into us basically with his shoulder. I mean, just kind of like at a, you know, a 45-degree angle, yeah, and just kind of popped us. And but no, we got it. It scared us to death, and we immediately scheduled our next trip up there.
That's crazy. We got hit by a deer, and we scheduled our next trip.
We're good to go.
Oh man, I mean, on the way home, we were like, oh my gosh, that is the craziest adventure ever, and it was in Oklahoma. Well, I think we were probably still in New Mexico at that point, but we may have been 5 miles from the Oklahoma border. I mean, it's unreal. It's the Wild West up there.
Wow.
So
that sounds cool.
I want to go so bad now. I'm like itching to go even worse.
It's only 6 hours. I mean, I've gone to Houston several times. It's 8, you know, so.
Well, we went to McAllister. That was 4.
No, it's only, well, round trip.
Well, round trip, yeah.
2 hours.
Well, but. And there's 2 hours turning your car back on, too. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Good one, Jason. That's good.
We're not going to live that one down.
That was just down the street from his house. That was around the corner from his house, actually.
Oh, my God. That's going to be funny, is next time he rides in your car, he's going to say, Jim, don't touch the button,
right.
That needs to be a T-shirt, I think. Photo Facts Podcast. And then we put down like the episode number. Don't push the button. You know what? That's the title.
That'll be a conversation piece.
I love that. That's
great. Don't push the button.
Aren't you supposed to push the button to take the picture?
You are.
That's what the question would be.
Yeah. But don't push the car button.
Yeah.
Because it will freaking stop.
Yeah, it will die.
And then Jim's screaming like,
I wasn't screaming. Yes, I was just freaking out.
You were freaking out. Your eyes popped out. It was like a cartoon. I have no brakes. I have no brakes.
Then we were both cracking up.
I was laughing so hard.
He was laughing harder than me at that point. But
oh, God, I had to pee so bad, dude.
Yeah, you did.
It was horrible. Oh, my God. Okay, so let's get back to the whole photo thing. So you had this class at Photocon, which is coming up great, and Photocon's going to be a blast. But let's talk a little bit more about your artwork, because I know you do real estate photography to make a living, which you also do well with installations and your artwork pieces. Do you ever have a client come out and ask you, like, hey, I'm looking for a cityscape of Oklahoma City, and you go create it? Or are all these personal works that you put on the website to sell?
So, you know, photography is art in general is a networking business, right? So and I don't mean like I'm in networking groups and all that kind of mess, yeah. But you meet people, you just meet people,
yeah.
And they over time get to know you or see your work. And so, originally the very first time I ever sold a piece, and it was a 4-foot by 4-foot piece. And to this day, I love it because the way I got it was stupid and should have never done it. So, I hung my camera 4 feet off the side of a building to get the shot. And, a client saw it on Facebook. Of course, they had no clue. I hung it off the side of a building to get it and bought it. And that was the greatest feeling I've ever had in photography, was somebody sending me a message off of Facebook and going, Jason, I want that in my office. I said, well, I can print it, you know, 2 foot by 2 foot. And he came back and said, I need bigger. So I ran around Oklahoma City trying to find a printer that, you know, what's the widest printer you could print on. And I found a guy that had one that would do 4 feet, and it was one of those Canon, it was a roll, right? So we printed on a, right. printed on a roll and then mounted it. And then from there they bought other work from me. And then, so that was, you know, somebody seeing my work and then wanting to buy it. And then when, one of my favorite projects I was ever a part of was when Heartland Middle School in Edmond opened. And somehow I got looped into this, and they didn't want to put, you know, there's a brand new building, and the architect had places for artwork in the building and was talking to the principal about, you know, what kind of artwork he wanted to have up. And he didn't want to have just stock imagery up, and he didn't want to have just generic words like read and be in school. And so a mutual friend connected us and said, you know, I had done his entire office. It was about, I did seven prints for him. And, when his building opened, and so he connected us. And so I sat down with them, and that was the first time it was a concept, right? So we sat down over, it was 3 portfolio viewings over about 6 or 7 months, where we were isolating it down to what did it mean? What is the Heartland, right? What did it mean to go to Heartland Middle School? What is the Heartland? And so we played with energy, and we played with prairies, and we played with train tracks, and what does it mean to be in the Heartland in Oklahoma? And ultimately it ended up being kind of, it was a very interesting theme. It ended up being, the story was about their journey through the Heartland. And so, so I shot all this stuff, and when it's all said and done, I have a bunch of work up in that school. The centerpiece was this 8 foot by 8 foot installation, and they put a quote over it. And it was a picture of a road. But all of it was, with the exception of one photo, every single shot that was in Heartland was from stuff I'd already shot. And then one photo we used in it was something that I had shot through the process. And so even at that point, people were just still buying my existing work and kind of my passion projects and all that. But then shortly after that, I started getting phone calls about, people would have an idea, right? So I want a skyline of Oklahoma City. You know, I did one that's a 8 or 9 foot metal on the side of Impressions Printing. And that's a company that I absolutely love. And they reached out to me one day and said, hey, we want to put this skyline. And they knew exactly what they wanted on the side of their building. And we need somebody that's able to shoot it big and print it big. And we want to install it. And it's a laser cut skyline of Oklahoma City.
Wow.
On the side of, on the front side of their building. And that was one of the first ones where people actually were kind of commissioning me for us. I get calls about, you know, I had somebody recently that wanted the Skydance Bridge at night, and they actually sent me the exact angle and shot they wanted. So from a pride perspective, you know, I didn't exactly yeah. love that, right?
Right.
But from a, oh my gosh, I can nail this shot, right? Mm-hmm. I knew how to do it. And so I went down two different times to compose it, set it up, and wait for the lighting conditions to be right. And then on the second night I was out there, I was able to get it. And it was doing, you know, the light and sky and everything was doing what I needed it to do to deliver to this client. And that one was a 5 foot by 7 foot metal. And I've done window graphics for, you know, there's some schools out in Moore. I think I'm in 6 schools in Moore right now. And there's another one I'm working with where they would have an idea. So we've got one school that their theme was childhood. So on the front of their building is all these childhood pictures. And then we did one that their theme was just Moore. They're right in the middle of Moore, and they wanted it to be all Moore. So it's a lot of stuff that the kids, most of them, the kids can actually see from the building or in their neighborhoods. And we did a whole infrared project with that.
Cool.
Had somebody wanted a picture of a park, and it's the largest thing I've ever printed. And it was just a bunch of statues in a park, and they wanted that photo right in their foyer. And it's a wall.
Wow.
So anyway, cool. That was a long way, but I get, I get a bit of both. I don't get a lot of inquiries on my website. I get a lot of referrals, or Facebook has been really good to me in terms of, so I'll post, you know, I post a lot of personal work on Facebook, and people, they'll message me about it every now and then. It's, I mean, I would say it's one out of every 20 photos that I post, right? But every now and then I get a message and be like, hey, I want something like this in my office, or, you know, big, small, you know, whatever. But I get a real thrill out of that. I love chasing those shots down, especially when a client has a vision and helping, like, kind of my art line up with what they want the feel of their office to be or their foyer to be. In like Heartland Middle School, I mean, we were telling a story. And so we told this whole story about their journey through the Heartland through photography. And I just thought that was about the coolest thing ever.
Oh, yeah. So, it's a great project. I was thinking about the fact that, you know, I get inquiries too, but not very often. But my problem is I haven't shot enough. I haven't shot enough Oklahoma City stuff, you know. I don't have a great selection because I don't make time for personal projects like that. You know, I've done some personal projects, you know, with models and stuff, but not around town. And so that's something that I've had to come up with or to say is they say, do you have a picture of this or whatever? And I'm like, no, I need to get out more and take more pictures. You know, I've had people purchase them, but not, I don't have enough. So
that's a good question.
Yeah.
It's good. Right there is like, because both you guys are actually in the same market.
Mm-hmm.
Both you guys primarily shoot real estate to pay the bills, keep the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. So Jason, what do you use or what keeps you inspired that after you've shot houses all day long, you're going out and doing personal projects? What makes you do that extra versus you come home and go, oh my God, I've had a long day. I got 6 houses tomorrow to shoot. So I'm just going to veg in front of the TV.
So that's a really good question. I went through a pretty long period of time. I would say 3 or 4 years where I was wore out. You know, it was back when, you know, I was working a job not even related to photography, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on the weekends, I'm shooting families and babies and seniors and weddings and, you know, and working 7 days a week and was just wore out and was getting tired of it. And if I'm being honest, I was at a point where I was kind of thinking about hanging it up and just focusing on my job and, you know, retiring from that. But, you know, my wife one time told me she noticed it and she brought it up and said, you know, you used to do this for fun. She goes, in fact, that's all you talked about. And you've got to get back to a place where you really enjoy this because you wanted to get into this. This is what you wanted. You wanted clients. You wanted to be a photographer. You know, kind of my dream was to be able to have the title photographer. And then the ultimate dream is to be able to claim to do art. Right. And so something interesting happened where I really listened to her and I really thought about it, that I wasn't passionate. I wasn't taking photos of my kids anymore. I just was, you know, if you gave me $100, I'd take a picture of it. Right. And so I really started thinking about what is it about photography that I missed or what is it that I always wanted to do I had never done. And I really, really liked deep, rich, tonal black and white work. And I just had never explored that. And I was looking at a photo that some guy posted on the internet one day, and it was of a building, and it was this crazy shot. And I didn't understand how he did it. And I didn't know a lot about neutral density filters or long exposure photography back then. And I saw in his caption for his photo, he said infrared. Hmm. And so that got me thinking, and I started exploring it and asking people about it. And of course, nobody knows anything about it. The comment I get from infrared all the time is, oh my gosh, I did that once in college.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, and so I was all of a sudden I was back to that place where I was day one. And I have a feeling you both can relate to this, but I was back to that place where I was obsessing about photography. I mean, all I thought about in the early 2000s was photography. That's all I thought about. You know, I was in a sales job and I would drive, you know, an hour and a half to 2.5 hours between customers. At that time I was up in North Dakota for a year. And all I thought about on those trips was photography. That's all I thought about. And it was an obsession and I didn't know what to do with it. And so, you know, the light would hit my kids in a certain way, or they would walk by the window and they would walk into basically the halation. And I'm like, stop right there. And I make them freeze and get my camera. And,
what, you know, a dad?
So I ruined my kids. Oh, yeah. But, you know, this, you know, I really got into like window light photography and portraiture and, you know, revving up. And, but then when people saw that work and I was really passionate about it, they would hire me, right? Well, then when people started hiring me and I'm getting wore out, and now it's not, I'm not fun anymore. And it's not passionate. I'm not passionate about it anymore. Uh-huh. And so when Candy said it, and she was being, I mean, she's my best friend in the world, and she was being the best friend I could have in that moment to tell me that your work is, it is not reflecting your passion right now. And she didn't know it, but I was contemplating quitting at that point. And she was right. So I went down the rabbit hole of infrared, and I spent 6 months trying to figure out how to shoot infrared. And there's not a lot of information out there that you can easily find. I think you guys will understand. I think there's one thing I learned through that process is there's a difference between, in photography, there's a difference between a technician and an artist. Mm-hmm. And when you start getting into the realm of like infrared, there's a lot of technical information out there about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And a lot of, you know, quote unquote, cool shots. Or look at this experiment I did, and it was kind of weird. And, but there's not a lot of art that I could find where people were doing this. And so I was just kind of on my own. And so the way that this is going back to the original question that Robert asked me, the way that I got back to that place where I don't come home and kick my feet up at night, like, I mean, it is not uncommon for me to be taking out the trash and look up and see a sunset, right? And be like, oh my gosh, I got to find a way to shoot this. And I'll just run in, grab my keys and go, baby, I'll be back in 20 and take off. Is because I remember back when I was learning about infrared photography, how fun that was and how thrilling that was. And then when I started producing that work, people bought it and people liked it. And the joke of it is that I really don't care. At the end of the day, it's nice when people like my work and it's thrilling when they buy my work. But the thing that I care about is that I get to work in photography. Yeah. The thing that I care about is that I get to live in this world and people appreciate my work and they're nice to me and I can make a living off of it finally. And when infrared started getting a bit old for me, just cause I spent, I bet you 3 years shooting it hard. I mean, I have a lot of infrared photo. It started getting a little bit old for me. But I noticed that by shooting infrared, because you can't actually see through the camera when you shoot it.
Right.
So you just set up your shot. You can't even look through it. And I don't have a converted camera. So I was accidentally learning how to use a neutral density filter because it, you know, infrared filter kind of doubles as a neutral density filter and doing these 30-second minute and a half exposures at noon, right? When the brightest time of the day and I'm doing a 30-second exposure and all of a sudden I started seeing photography way different and I started seeing color, right? And I started seeing tones and things that, because you're not going to, you know, my old camera that I was using before, I'm using a Mark IV now, but before that, you know, it was a 30-second shot. It was a 30-second buffer. So every shot I took, if I shot a minute and a half exposure, it was 3 minutes before that image popped up on my camera. Mm-hmm. So you better get it. I mean, think about that. If you do, you know, if you like rapid fire 100 photos, right? What is that, 300 minutes?
Yeah.
And so I really started getting very disciplined that it was kind of going back to film, right? And it was like back in high school and back in college where I was learning all this stuff. And felt really good. But in those moments when I was standing there looking at these scenes, waiting for the images to be developed, I started to see color. And so then I started shooting my color landscapes, which is, I'm probably more known for that now than my infrared work, and doing color landscapes. But I learned it all by just finding my passion. And so at the end of the day, I mean, I was helping with a Santa charity that took 5 weeks 2 years ago. And I was on my last shift helping with this charity. I had worked, well over 200 hours leading up to this event, helping. It was for Northwest Rotary, and I'm really proud of that project. We raised a lot of money for charity at Christmas. And I worked well over 200 hours, and I worked my last shift, and I went home, and somebody texted me and goes, "Do you see the moon tonight?" Well, I mean, I got to go see it. So my son and I jumped in the car. And I mean, I was wiped out. I mean, I literally wanted to open a beer and sit and not talk to anybody. But just the fact that somebody wanted to message me and say, "Have you seen the moon?" So I jumped in my car, took my boy with me, and we chased it down. And I took a photo I'm very proud of. And it's that think it's Church of the Servant over there, Memorial. Is that the one on Memorial?
The big one?
Christmas. Yeah, and they've got their big Christmas tree that's out
front.
Yeah,
uh-huh, out front. Uh-huh.
And I got a shot I am really, really proud of the moon rising next to this giant Christmas tree. And I had a fun time chasing it with my son. I mean, I take my kids with me on this kind of stuff. And he thought it was fun because we had to off-road to get to it. Because the sun was not, I mean, the moon was not on the street side of that. It was on the open lot side of it.
Oh,
so
gosh.
We actually drove through this field out in the middle of the night. It was so funny. You couldn't see anything. I was hoping we didn't hit like some ditch or pothole.
Yeah.
You know?
Or a deer.
Or a deer. Yeah. So that was a long way of answering that. But it's, I do this because I love it. For houses, I really enjoy it. I like photographing houses, and things that I don't like to do, I don't do them anymore. I mean, I rarely do weddings anymore. I rarely take family photos anymore. It's mainly for people that I know and that I love, and I've photographed them since their kids were babies, and now their kids are in high school, and I enjoy that. I enjoy keeping that going. But, you know, it used to be that families was the main part of my business. And, I mean, I'll photograph maybe 10 families this year. I did a wedding this last weekend, but it was for one of my original clients from 2008. And
getting remarried?
She was getting remarried. And, yeah, and I turn, and the funny thing is I turn a lot of that work down, or I'll refer it to, you know, wonderful photographers like Alex Dugan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love Alex.
Oh my gosh. You talk about just about the best thing ever in the photography world. She's incredible. But you know, I'll refer it to people, but, so I've just gotten to that spot where I actively try to not lose my passion for shooting because it's fun. I wanted to be a photographer so bad since I was 16 years old, and I am one. I mean, I'm 42 now and I'm a full-time photographer, and I just don't want to ever lose that. I don't want to ever lose that feeling of really getting up every day and being excited about what I do.
Yeah. So if you ever get to that point where you're burned out or you're not inspired. So what I'm getting from that story is don't stop, like in a nutshell, don't stop looking for new things or look for new things to inspire you. Purposely go out and look for new things, like go and do experiments or, you know, anything at all that you may find something that will inspire you. Does that
absolutely
get, yeah. So
I think that's awesome. So I'm gonna give him something to inspire him for his next shoot before we wrap up.
Okay.
So have you ever shot a moving water?
Like photographing water?
Yeah, like a you know a.
Moving water.
Moving water.
Like a stream?
Like a stream, a waterfall, a fountain. Okay.
Absolutely.
Since you like color and light. So there's a thing up there called a Harris shutter. Most people don't know about it. It's an old term because I'm an old photographer. So the Harris shutter basically are your three primary colors and a black slide that's put in front of the camera and it's dropped in front of the lens, so it basically, during the exposure, during one frame, you're actually taking three individual frames that are all in registration, except for what's moving in the frame, which is the water.
Ooh.
So the water will take on
so cool.
different light structures of green, red, and blue, and then, of course, the black slide stops the exposure.
So you're saying literally, are they
like little, it drops. Like
you, are they filters, like square
they're
filters?
They're square filters that you make yourself. You tape them together.
How big are they?
Well, as big as your lens is, whatever lens
right.
you're using.
So it's like a, what do you call it, Tiffin?
Like Kokin filter. We used to do it with the Kokin filters. And then you would take, I don't even think they make it anymore. So you had to make it yourself. You'd make a cardboard holder that this would fit in. And it would just slide down. And it was obviously a little bit of timing.
Mm-hmm.
And you would shoot it like F-16, a low ISO, at an eighth of a second or a fourth of a second. And there would be a black slide in front of it. Or you would use bulb. And you would open your camera up. And then you'd drop it. And it would make, obviously, three very quick exposures with your three primary colors. When the exposures that's on it is combined, whatever is completely still has all three of your primary colors, your RGB.
So you're shooting actual frame, like
one frame. This is actually becoming your shutter, and your shutter has three different colors on it.
Wow.
Yeah, I see this. This is cool.
Yeah.
So give that a try next time you get bored.
I just literally typed myself a note. I love exploring stuff like that. You know, when you make it hard, you know, like infrared, I mean, I really have, when you talk about workshops, I have actually thought about doing an infrared workshop just because I know I've met a lot of people after I did my infrared class at Photocon a couple of years ago that were just really enthusiastic about it. That one of the greatest things that you can ever do is limit yourself. So when you talked about like isolating a subject or like photographing only yellow buses, right? Or, you know, maybe only carry a 50 millimeter lens around with you for 2 days and just see what you get.
Right.
You know, when you can limit, absolutely limit the options, right? Or you can make it hard. Like, I'm only going to shoot a photo using this process. And I think you called it a Harris filter. What do you call it?
Harris filter.
And so
Harris shutter, I'm sorry, like, I apologize. Harris shutter.
So a Harris shutter, you know, something like that. By being hard on yourself and really like saying, I am going to find a way to shoot this way. That's really where your passion explodes into your photography. Instead of having like every option, I mean, these DSLRs we're shooting with now are more complex than, than the moon landers, right? I mean, these are extremely complicated machines and computers in them. And I love it when you can just take it back to its bare element. And I mean, the idea of shooting a color image through three separate filters to get that, you know, because you would essentially, I'm assuming your things that were still will look somewhat right in the color spectrum, right?
It'll look identical.
Yeah.
It'll look fine.
Because you're shooting through all three colors.
Correct. You're shooting through all three colors. So they're in perfect registration, but the water that's moving is an imperfect registration. So you'll have areas that look normal, but then you'll have lots of areas that are the three primary colors because that happened during that one shot. And then the water traveled, and the next filter came down and exposed a different part that's different than the first one, and you'll get these iridescent colors in your streams.
Oh, I'm going to check it out. I'm going to totally try it. That's fantastic.
It's probably on Wikipedia somewhere, I'm sure. But the hardest part is building it.
I love rabbit holes.
Yeah, building it and making it light tight so you don't have anything coming in. I think there was a camera catalog. Well, we used to call it the Dream Book, basically. It was called Porter's Camera Catalog. And I think they actually had a kit that you would buy, and it had the cardboard strips and the little plastic holder, and you'd make your own. And it's one of those techniques from the old days that I don't think anybody uses anymore.
Oh man, no, I am all in on this, Robert. I'm not. This will be. Hopefully, I can do something and show it at Photocon. We'll see if I can put something together before that, and then give you some credit for it.
Yeah, and you should also send it to us, and we'll put it on the Facebook and the website.
Oh, absolutely.
Or whatever, and we'll
say this print is available, signed by Jason Pierce.
Yeah, exactly.
With a foreword by Robert Trawick and Jim Felder.
Oh, man. I'm looking this up right now, and they're showing portraits in it. Oh,
yes.
I am all in. Oh, this is amazing.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, thanks, buddy.
All right, no problem. We'll go ahead and wrap up the show, so be sure to check out Photocon Live with Jason Pierce. He'll be one of the speakers there. And you can go to photoconokc.com to get your tickets. You know, and we should probably explain real quick on the tickets, because I got this from Eric Williams, the manager at Bedford's. So if you have a ticket now, you will get the Photocon Live, and you will get a ticket for next year's Photocon in March. If you do not have a ticket, the tickets are $99.99. If you use the code VIP for the PhotoFacts podcast, you'll get it for $79.99. And you'll get the live this year, and you'll get a choice of Photocon OKC in March or Photo Expo in Little Rock next August. So, Jason, it was great talking to you. I really appreciate you spending some time with us. Stay on board after we sign off, and we'll just go ahead and do our little wrap-up. And I think that's it, isn't it, Jim?
That's all we got. Yeah, it's just 4 minutes over.
Yeah, so how easy was that, Jason, talking for an hour?
Yeah.
That went You know, this is a good warm up for Photocon, man, because I'm still knee deep trying to do that presentation, which has got to go 70 minutes.
Ooh, wow.
So, oh, okay.
This was good. No, you guys are awesome. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem. So 70 minutes, when you look at it, you take off 5 minutes in the front for introduction, 5 minutes for problems that are technical, and then take off 20 minutes at the end for questions.
Q&A, yeah.
Maybe you're down to 45 minutes talking.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so, in fact, so I want to share one real quick story with you because this is funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eric told me I go 70 minutes and then I leave 20 minutes for questions. He scheduled me for 90 minutes total. So that's going to be a minor panic attack and trying to time that. But Robert, you talked about the introduction at the end. Can I tell a funny story on
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Oh, of course.
So you and I had never met and you walked in and looked at me and said, "Hey, I'm Robert. I'm going to do the introduction for your class." I said, "Cool. I'm Jason." And I may not have introduced myself. Now that I think about it, I'd be like, "Cool. You know, thank you, whatever." So you got up in front of a room full of, I can't remember how many people were in there. And it was when I did Chasing Light last year, and you said, "Hey, this is Justin Pierce, and he's going to do this awesome thing." And I just stood there, and right when you walked out of the door, or out of the room, and the door closed behind you, I looked at everybody and said, "Actually, my name's Jason Pierce, and I'm really glad to be here." And the whole room died. I meant to tell you that afterwards. It was one of the funniest. And it was just such a great way to start the class.
Yeah.
And we started it with just a really, really good laugh. So
that's cool.
It was a little bit at Robert's expense, but it was all in good fun.
Oh, well then we should try it again this year or next year. We have to alternate.
Yeah.
So then you'll do my introduction next year and you just introduce me as Ron Trawick.
Yeah. I can do that totally.
That would be totally awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Awesome. All right. Well, then we're going to wrap up now. Thank you so much for spending time with us. Stay on the air. We'll go ahead and sign off with our listeners, and we'll do a quick wrap up with you, Jason. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Jim.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening, people. Listeners, FortifactsPodcast.com. And
I have that bumper we can run.
Yeah, let's do that. Hey, thanks for listening. You can find Jim at jimfelder.com and Robert at trawickimages.com. Send us an email at twins@photofaxpodcast.com or voicemail at 405-585-6337.
Check out our YouTube PhotoFax channel for weekly tips and tricks. Visit our Facebook page for news and discussion. Please help others find this podcast by reviewing us on iTunes. We really appreciate your support.